Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I am Matt.
And today we're discussing when frugality doesn't cut it.
Yeah, Joel, this episode, we're talking about frugality. You know, frugality, that's a word that we use often. We use it when we talk about being frugal or cheap. But frugality is a mainstay of personal finances. It's something that we come back to often. But like we're going to talk about in this episode, it's not always something that we can count on to make some big changes in our life.
Yeah, sometimes there are other levers that we need to pull, right? In frugality, we just can't cut back anymore. And so that's kind of what this episode is about. If you find yourself having gone into personal finance, diving deep, and you're realizing, you know what, I've made a lot of frugal moves, but I got to do more in order to get my finances kind of where I want them to be. Well, that's what this episode is going to get into.
Exactly.
Matt, before we get into that, let's do a frugal or cheap. And this is a frugal or cheap or just plain funny.
Or ridiculous.
So I saw this article. There's this guy I follow on Twitter, and he called this article Flushing Money Down the Toilet. And it's literally...
So a little heads up of what this article is actually going to be about.
Yeah. So he literally goes through all of the things that cost money about going to the bathroom at home and why you should take your number twos at work instead of doing it at the house.
Yeah, specifically number twos. It's not about the number ones, because with number twos, there's all these other expenses. You got to account for the candle, toilet paper, you know, maybe an extra flush because you can't use the economy flush, right? Like you go with the full flush, not the half flush.
It's just potentially that plumber call once a year that you're going to have to make in case, you know, it gets a little unwieldy.
Well, what I love about that article, and we'll post this up in our show notes, but I love that he dove so deep and so hardcore into the numbers.
There's even a calculator so you can assess your own personal situation.
Your own usage.
Yeah. So since we're talking about frugality, I just thought that was funny because a super frugal person would probably potentially think about something
totally,
like that. And
yeah.
I'm not going to say it's something I've never thought about before. Well, I just never have dug into this amount of detail.
Yeah, if it's something that you can kind of keep in the back of your mind and that can slightly modify your behavior, I'm like, all right, well, then it's just a little more natural. But it feels cheap if you're going way out of your way in order to make number two happen while you're at work. Well, I will say, for me, working from home, this isn't something I personally can do, right? Like, my office is my home. So for us, that's an expense we realize ourselves, except home office deduction.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, there's a percentage because I use a room in our house.
So you get to write off some of your utilities.
It's a percentage of the size of your home and then utilities as well. So boom, I can go whenever I want.
I think one of my favorite parts about the post, besides the calculator, is that he calls it, you know, we talk about opportunity cost when we talk about money. Mm-hmm. He calls it the poopertunity cost. So yeah. It was clever. If anybody wants to mess around with that calculator.
You can send your poop jokes to Joel.
Yeah. Feel free to tweet your best poop jokes at us.
I didn't totally understand that part, though. He's talking about the opportunity cost. Is he saying that while you're at work, you're missing out on...
No, what he's saying is if you poop at home as opposed to pooping at work, there's this opportunity cost of your money. Because
while you're at home.
You're spending your own money.
Your own time.
On the water bill, on the candle, on the running of the fan with the electricity, all that kind of
stuff.
Gotcha. So obviously it's just a little
bit
embellished.
Silly.
It's a little goofy. Yeah. But, you know, especially since we're talking about frugality and maybe when frugality doesn't cut it. Well, this kind of went a little too far, but super funny and definitely worth talking about on the show.
Yeah, we'll share that with y'all as well.
All right, man, let's quickly mention the beer that we're having on the show today. This beer, man, I've been drinking this for over 10 years. This is Hibernation Ale.
It is old school.
Yeah, by Great Divide Brewing.
Well, you said you've been drinking it for 10 years. I don't think I've had it in 8 years. It has been forever since I've had this beer. This is one of those that I think you and I both kind of fell into years ago. But this is one that we've sort of, you know, it's kind of sat on the back shelf a little bit when you go to the beer shop and you see it and you kind of little tip of the cap to it, but you don't really pick it up. I'm glad that we are able to share this one today.
Yeah, man, this is an old ale and I love a good old ale. So we will talk about this one at the end of the show. But for now, Matt, let's get on to the topic at hand. We're talking about when frugality doesn't cut it, when it's not enough. And Matt, you and I both agree that frugality is a great tool in our personal finance Swiss Army knife. We're pretty frugal fellas ourselves, and we love seeing the frugal steps that our friends and our listeners are implementing into their lives. oftentimes they're doing things that we hadn't even thought of, right? And it's encouraging to see that. It's inspirational and it's educational for us.
Yeah, it's creative as well.
Right? Yeah,
I love that.
Super creative stuff. I love just seeing how people are saving money. And it just makes me want to go harder after saving more of my own and making frugal cuts. But frugality alone doesn't cut it. There are times when we need to prioritize other tools in our personal finance Swiss Army knife to help us achieve our money goals. So today we're going to discuss the role that frugality should play in our financial lives and how to use the other tools at your disposal when just adding more frugal hacks to our life won't do the trick.
That's right, man. So let's go ahead first and define frugality. There are a lot of different definitions of what people consider to be frugal, right? I mean, you and I, we go back and forth often on the show and we say, is this frugal or is this cheap? Like even our own definition of frugality and cheapness can vary depending on the specific situation. But for this episode, here's how we're going to define frugality. Frugality is the small changes that you can make by cutting around the periphery of your budget, right? So some of these changes can be bigger than others. It could be as big as maybe cutting cable, or it can be as small as making your own soap or maybe even flushing one less time because you are going number two at work, right? But frugality is essentially looking at those line items and seeing how you can save a few more dollars every single month. You're kind of, you know, you're tightening the belt just a little bit more, trying to squeeze a few more cents out of that line item.
Yeah. Yeah. We are, of course, all about this. You shouldn't skip out on frugality as you're on your journey to achieving your financial goals. You have to use it well. But there are some obvious limitations to frugality because it can only take you so far. Some folks have a greater need to practice extreme frugality, right? But lots of people listening to this podcast likely don't fall into this category. If you have a smartphone, you listen to podcasts, and in particular, if you're listening to a personal finance podcast, the likelihood that you have the ability to make other impactful changes is pretty high. But before we get into those changes, let's talk a little more about frugality and how we should view it.
Yeah, dude. So I think the first thing we need to cover is how pretty much everything in our budget should be initially on the table when it comes to making some of those cuts, right? We should reconsider most of the expenses in our lives and not assume that anything is untouchable. This is reminding me of our interview with Liz, Miss Frugalwoods. We talked with her about how she and her husband, they cut their own hair at home. And by the way, that's something I do as well.
Yeah.
Have we ever talked about that?
I think you've mentioned it before.
Have we talked about how I've cut your hair before?
I think we might have posted a picture on Instagram one time.
Really?
When you cut my hair.
Because you're like, dude, I don't have time to get a haircut. I don't want to pay the money. It was while our families were at the beach.
Yeah.
It's, small aside. Anyway.
I will say.
We're pretty frugal.
Not the best haircut I've ever had. Also not the worst.
Hey,
so
I'm fine with
somewhere
that.
Somewhere in the middle.
So, you know, we talked with her about how they cut their own hair. She also has this large, massive CO2 tank where she can make her own carbonated water instead of buying LaCroix or instead of even using her SodaStream with a little CO2 cartridges, I guess, which are a lot more expensive. There are all sorts of ways that we can creatively cut back. And sometimes when we think that we are frugal, we actually aren't, right? So we just haven't done enough research to see what other options might help us to save even more money. Our culture isn't one that lends itself to frugality.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. So like there are probably a lot of different frugal hacks that you haven't considered yet. We've talked about free stuff. We've talked about cutting the cord, even cheap cell phone providers. More frugal knowledge and implementation can have a real impact for the majority of us.
Yeah. So I think it's important to say just one more time, we're not talking trash about frugality. We love frugality.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many good things that frugality adds to our lives. And even just honestly, the money savings is big, but just kind of that ability to realize that we can do with less is a huge part of we love frugality.
Oh, and also too, and it can only not save you money, but I think there's a lot of joy that can come from being frugal as well. Like we've talked before about obviously using public libraries, right? It's another mainstay right there next to frugality. But recently, man, we've been using the Libby app a whole lot because I've synced it with my Kindle. Which is amazing because now I'm able to pull up books from the library on my phone in the Libby app and then instantly send them to my Kindle. Dude, this has been huge for us. I've been reading The Magic Treehouse to my girls. They love it. It's a ton of fun. And if they're really into it, I can literally pull up the next book and have that sent to my Kindle instantly. So I'm just saying, it's just a ton of fun. We've gotten a lot of value out of that. And sure, we could purchase the e-version of it on Amazon, right? But they're about $4 a pop, and we've already burned through six of those books. So that's $25 right there that I've saved. Just a small frugal win.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the more that we have our eyes opened, and so much of that does involve kind of bringing in other voices that have a lot of wisdom on how to become more frugal, how to save money, what areas you can cut back, what apps you can use, right? Stuff like that. There's all sorts of frugal tips and tricks out there that, you know, that there's a lot that we aren't privy to. And we rely on our listeners and our friends to kind of hear more about those things. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, frugality, it can be kind of fun. It can be a joy. We can also kind of gamify our ability to institute frugality into our lives, which is great. But I think it's also important to be warned. Extreme frugality can have negative consequences in relationship to our money and to others. And it can also have negative consequences just for ourselves, because it might not be fun to cut back on some of those expenses that we truly enjoy in life, right, Matt? Like if we tried to over frugalize our use of craft beer, it would probably be pretty miserable. That's why we kind of set out a few things in our personal lives that we're willing to say, you know what, we're not going to let frugality really touch those areas of our lives, because those are places where we've decided it's important to put our money. It aligns with our values.
Yeah.
And so, like, let's give an example here. I think avoiding expensive coffee typically is a pretty smart move, right? If you go out every single morning to get a $4 or $5 coffee, that can add up. And it really does equate to a major expense in your life.
Oh, yeah.
But not spending that $4 just once to have a great two-hour conversation with a friend, well, I think ultimately that's kind of being more cheap, and that's letting extreme frugality infringe on having a great conversation with a friend.
Yeah, that's a classic example of imposing your cheapness on somebody else, right? Because it's affecting that relationship. So it can definitely have a negative impact on that relationship. By the way, okay, what if you were going to a coffee shop to meet a friend and they were already there and they didn't have coffee and they're sitting there? What would you do?
I'd buy their coffee.
Would you buy their coffee?
Yeah.
What if they don't want coffee?
What do they want?
Well, what I'm getting to is that you're using the space of the coffee shop, and it looks like they're not going to get coffee. Would you get coffee for yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's probably really cheap to take up a table in a coffee shop and not have purchased anything.
That's what I'm getting to.
That's not cool.
Yeah. So I mean, if I got there, my friend was already there and they had a cup, I feel like that kind of puts me off the hook a little bit. I'm like, okay, I can get a cup of coffee to kind of join them. You know, there's a lot of things to consider here. It also gives me the freedom maybe to not go ahead and get that fancy latte that I'm going to be tempted to get, right?
Yeah.
Caramel latte or a cortado. Man, those are my favorites.
Oh, those are so good.
Yeah.
I think really more than anything, when it comes to the negative consequences that frugality can bring, it's not to say that frugality has to have these bad ramifications. It doesn't have to affect your relationships negatively, but I think it's just important to mention that it can.
Right.
If we're not careful, and if we let frugality kind of take the driver's seat in our life, as opposed to kind of being that passenger person holding the map, helping us out, you know, if we let it take over the driver's seat, it really can run amok, and it can hurt our relationships and the people closest to us.
Completely agree, man. Something else to keep in mind is that if you are an extreme frugalite, there is also a diminishing value to continuing to make hard attempts at frugality. This is, you know, when maybe the 80-20 effect is in full force. Your initial frugal cuts can be quite helpful, allowing for some major financial breathing room. But then those secondary frugal moves will offer far less benefits. I'm thinking of, for instance, you might be spending over like $160 a month on cable. And over the years, you've also picked up a number of those different streaming services, right? And so you're just paying way out the nose for all the TV that you don't actually watch, when in reality, you can make some pretty big cuts. And you know what? Hulu, last Black Friday, they did that $2 a month deal again. And if you happen to snag that deal, you might say, you know what? I can get about 80% of all of my TV watching done through Hulu for $2 a month.
Yeah.
That's a savings of $158 if you're paying $160 before.
And that first cut is huge.
It's massive.
Yeah.
But guess what? You probably don't need to be agonizing. Like, should I cut that $2 a month Hulu? Don't worry about it. Like, who cares? It's only $2. But those bigger cuts certainly can be worthwhile. But just make sure you're not getting bogged down in the details and the minutia and just all the nitty gritty of trying to reduce your expenses even further when there's little chance of that maybe actually even happening.
Yeah. The first frugal cut can yield major results. And then those smaller frugal cuts that we try to make sometimes, maybe we're putting too much time, too much effort, and we're thinking too hard about that when there are other things that we can be focused on that can help us make bigger moves with our money, bigger moves with our personal finances, as opposed to that $2 or $3 cut, right? And so let's talk about those things, Matt. Let's talk about those bigger moves that we can make when frugality isn't enough. And we'll get into that right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break, and we're going to talk now about some of those bigger expenses, some of those bigger things in our life that we can focus on in order to make some big changes when it comes to our finances.
Yeah, the way we initially defined frugality, we said it's cutting around the periphery of our budget. It's those smaller trims that we can make, and when frugality doesn't cut it, we have to make major trims. We have to take an axe to those big things, right?
Yeah. Not around the periphery. We're going straight to the heart of it.
Yeah.
So, okay. A quick example for you though, before we kind of launch into those, let's talk about eating maybe a little bit healthier. In the same way that frugality won't cut it when it comes to our finances, there are, I think, other areas in our life where the same principle is at play. So for example, I think about the food we eat and trying to stay maybe a little bit healthy, right? So in an attempt to do that, you might be making the switch from regular ice cream to the ice cream that has maybe no sugar added or even the low fat stuff, right?
Ugh, gross.
Yeah. We don't need to get on that. So while that might make a difference, if you really want to move the needle, what you should be doing is you shouldn't be looking at low fat ice cream. You should be looking at not eating ice cream altogether. You need to avoid having that bowl of ice cream right before you go to bed. Like, that's what's going to make the big difference.
Yeah, or sparingly, every once in a while, you know, you have a bowl of ice cream. But
if the good stuff every now and then.
Yeah, but if you're eating the low fat every single night before bed, you're right. Yeah, that's not a good move.
I also see how this food example parallels how we approach beer.
Oh, yeah, true.
But it's those paradigm shifting ways of looking at a problem completely differently that'll actually lead to massive change, not just those tiny little frugal tweaks.
Yeah. So one of the major ways that we are able to move the needle when frugality isn't quite enough is to look at the major expenses in our lives. When frugality just isn't going to cut it, it's time to go big, right? So let's look at a few areas in our budget where we're talking about these major hacks as opposed to just cutting around the edges, just nibbling and taking off pennies and dollars. Well, of course, housing is probably the biggest line item in your budget. So let's talk about that real quick.
Yeah, on average, dude, Americans, 35% of their budget goes towards housing. That is a massive amount.
That's a big chunk. So instead of focusing on the smaller things like letting it mellow in between flushes or pooping at your place of work, it's important to look for ways to drastically make changes. And so, one of those things might be house hacking. That's putting an extra room on Airbnb or looking for a cute duplex so you can have a full-time tenant next door. You might want to consider downsizing altogether. Maybe you realize that you don't need all the space that you have anymore or ever, right?
Yeah, or maybe you've never needed that space and you're just finally realizing that.
Yeah, and so you realize you're living in 3,000 square feet and you're like, you know what? 1,600 square feet would do me just fine and it would simplify my life a good bit. And at the same time, it would save me a whole lot of money every month. You might even want to think about relocating. Ask yourself why it is that you live where you do. Going through that exercise can really help. I mean, I think there's all these ways that we can consider tackling the problem of how much housing costs us every month. And if you can lower your housing costs from 35% of your budget to 20% of your budget, if you can make a big move like that, well, then we're not talking about getting rid of a $10 streaming service. We're talking about moving the needle in a major way pretty quickly.
Yeah, and here's the thing too. Some of these changes can seem kind of scary, right? Like, we're talking about changing your housing, and to a lot of people, their home is like represents security and it's this sort of safe place, right? But here's the thing, like, thinking through these things is an incredible exercise, like you said, to help us to focus on what it is we actually prioritize. Because yeah, you hear us say, oh, you should consider moving. And that sounds ridiculous to some people, probably to a lot of people. But if you actually take the time and think about what is it that we value, that is when your priorities can begin to realign. And then you can start placing priority on the things that actually matter to you, right? So for instance, maybe you move to a city because you originally got a job there 5 or 6 years ago, but now you work completely online and you can move anywhere. Well, that's a good time to reconsider, like, why is it that we're actually staying here? Is it because we're just used to the neighborhood? Or are there other bigger reasons that are keeping us here? I think when you can actually think through some of these things, that's when these kind of big audacious moves like this, like moving out of the city to somewhere that's maybe more affordable, that's when something like that seems not only doable, but something that you're excited about because you've identified an incredible way to save a ton of money.
Yeah, I think, Matt, it is important to note when we're talking about this, that when you move, sometimes there are other expenses that you incur. And for instance, where we live, it's pretty bikeable. I can bike to work, you know, you can bike to pick up kids from school and that kind of thing, right? Instead of having another car, instead of driving more, where we live, it enables us to save money in other places.
So certainly some secondary benefits there.
Yeah. So I think if you're talking about moving somewhere else, you want to incorporate all the potential increased costs and decreased costs that you might face. And on that note of cars and transportation, well, transportation is this other potential place for us to make a huge dent in our monthly spending. And the thing is, it's not agonizing between a car that might get 35 miles to the gallon versus 40 miles to the gallon. That ultimately is a very small item in our budget. The gas costs that we'll incur typically don't make a huge difference in our lives if we just increase our fuel economy a little bit. But the bigger thing is considering what the purpose of our car is. If it's just functional and dependable transportation and it's not for status, well, then we're going to be able to make a better choice and we're going to be able to save a lot of money doing so. This means not having a car payment and definitely avoiding leasing a car. By the way, if you do have a lease, it's important. There are two great websites you should check out, Swap a Lease or Lease Trader. You can get rid of your lease and you can find somebody else who's looking to take on a lease. And then
at
you can
a discount.
At a discount. And then you can get this cheaper method of transportation that's going to save you potentially hundreds of dollars every month.
And on that note, also avoid the car subscription services as well, because that's an even higher premium that you're paying for absolutely zero work. But guess what? You're paying out the nose for that junk.
Yeah, those maybe one of these days, those things will come down in price and we'll be able to have car subscription services that just aren't insanely expensive
for the common man.
But it seems like a lot of them are $800, $900, $1,000 right now. And so, yeah, I would probably avoid those too. And Matt, I think another thing to mention is that for folks out there that have a car payment, consider selling your car, taking that hit, and then buying something to drive that's less expensive. And when we start talking about cutting things in this fashion, like selling a car that you're upside down on, taking the hit, and then buying a car that's even cheaper, well, we have to talk about the sunk cost fallacy, which I don't think we've ever talked about on the show before. Sometimes it makes sense to cut loose a recent new car purchase or a recent purchase of any kind, even if we're going to quote unquote lose money on it. We keep expenses in our life oftentimes because of how much we've invested in those things, as opposed to weighing our decision based on how beneficial it will be for our future finances. So sometimes, Matt, it just makes sense to cut our losses and do something more productive with that money.
Well, Joel, this actually makes me think of Seinfeld. I know you're a big Seinfeld fan. You used to watch it back in the day.
Classic show.
Yeah, I watched very few episodes of that, but one that I am aware of. It was the one where Elaine, she had gotten the punch cards at the sub place. And she had gotten enough punches on her card that she was going to be able to get a free sub. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah. And she loses the card, right?
She loses the card. And so she spends the entire episode basically trying to find her card. And people, they're always like, forget about it. Like, let it go.
And the whole time she's like, the subs are terrible, but but I'm halfway there. I have to keep eating them so I can get the free one.
Exactly. Well, she's more than halfway there. She's right there at the brink. And so she's committed to finding that card. And it doesn't matter that the subs are crappy. She's emotionally invested. And so that's the fallacy part of the sunk cost problem here, is that we become emotionally attached to what we've committed our time and what we've committed our money to, that it doesn't matter if the benefit we receive afterwards isn't that great. We're so committed to it.
Yeah. So I think that's a good way to think about purchases that we've already made that maybe we can cut ties with. It's like, would you make that purchase now?
Regardless of how much money, regardless of how much time you've already sunk into it.
Yeah. And when you're talking about the car specifically, Matt, if you spent $20,000 on a car and it's worth, $12,000 now, well, would you buy a car that's worth $12,000 for 20 grand? No, you probably wouldn't. And so if you have the cash on hand and you're able to get out from under that car and buy a cheap used car, that can revolutionize your finances going forward. And so, yeah, I just think it makes sense to put that on the table, those bigger cuts, even if it involves maybe a more difficult emotional move, like selling a car that you've got so much money invested in.
Yeah, totally, man. And another thing too is consider maybe moving to a one car family, right? If you've got a family, if you have a household and you've got two cars, but maybe you're really not using that second car all that often. Well, like, it's worth considering selling that car, getting rid of the insurance on that second vehicle. And you know what? If you are a single individual and you only have one car, if you live in the city and you've got good options, good alternative transportation options, I think it's worth challenging yourself and thinking through, like, what would it look like for me to not have a car? We talk about this often, but with the technologies, with ride sharing, bikes, scooters, all the things out there, there are incredible ways to be able to move around a city in an urban environment where you wouldn't necessarily have to have a vehicle.
And one thing I think that gets overlooked, the Waze carpool feature is really neat. It's very similar to rideshare.
Yeah, have you tried it yet?
I haven't tried it yet. I need to try it, but I've been really, really interested to check it out.
Yeah.
Because the prices are so much cheaper than if you were just to take a Lyft or an Uber, even like the Uber pool, right? It basically costs like 50 cents a mile and you're sharing this ride with someone else who lives in your part of town and works kind of close to where you work. And so, yeah, it's a really sweet option for folks that are trying to eliminate car expenses in their lives.
Yeah, because I do see that as an option with Lyft and Uber, right? Like you see the shared option.
Yeah.
And it's not that much cheaper. Like a lot of times it's just a few bucks. I mean, depending on the length of your trip, but it's a few bucks more and it sometimes will take a lot longer. And so I'm just like, well, I'm not going to try to save $3 or $4 and have it take 20 minutes longer to get to my destination. To me, personally, that's not worth it.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, man, Waze Carpool. You got to check that out and report back soon.
All right. I'm going to put that on my February to-do list. I'm going to try Waze Carpool.
Yeah.
All right, dude. I'll report back.
I love it. All right. Let's also talk quickly some about food. Not everyone can make a dramatic cut here. Cheaper cuts of meat or maybe eating less meat overall are frugal moves that can help. And, you know, eating out less obviously can have a big impact on the amount of money that we put towards our food. But there are some folks out there who could save a lot of money by shopping at maybe Aldi. Say, instead of shopping at Whole Foods.
That would make a big difference.
Yeah, or even just packing their lunches, eating at home, eating leftovers. The percentage of our budgets that goes towards food, goes towards groceries, is about 13%. And, you know, what we're talking about here might sound a little measly. We're talking about these big cuts that we can make in our lives, right? But here's the thing, we eat every single day. And so when you make a small change that happens 3 times a day, well, that adds up because we eat every single day and the small changes, they compound. So you get to the end of the month and it can be a noticeable difference in your budget.
Yeah, I think when we're talking about food, Matt, if you took the hyper frugal approach, you'd be cutting coupons, you'd be saving 50 cents on a particular item. But when you're making a massive change, like you just suggested, of a Whole Food shopper switching to shop at Aldi instead, well, right there, that's one move.
That's the big change.
That's one move that saves you a ton of money every month, as opposed to clipping the coupons, taking a lot of time, and trying to lower that cost of your food bill on the periphery with these little nibbles. You're taking this big bite out of your food bill just by making that switch to Aldi, right?
I like the usage of big bite in this example, Joel.
Well, thanks. I thought it fit.
Quite appropriate. Yeah, so basically the super frugal person is pinching pennies and counting dollar bills. Like you said, they might be clipping coupons just to save 50 cents. Whereas the person that takes this approach, that takes the approach of looking to the larger things, the larger steps where we can have some big impact in our life, they're looking to save hundreds of dollars through these bigger moves. When frugality isn't enough, you have to look to those larger line items in your budget. You can't count on being able to optimize something just a little bit more.
Yeah, I completely agree, Matt. Well, the other side of the coin, when frugality isn't enough, well, it's not just about axing those bigger line items and saving big money in those ways, but it's also, we have to look at the income side of the equation, and we'll talk about that right after the break.
All right, Joel, we're back from the break talking about how frugality, how it won't always cut it. And the reason it won't always cut it is because sometimes, like you said, we need to look to the other side of the equation, and that's to earn more money. Growing your income, that's going to be another tool in your money arsenal to help you save more when frugality isn't enough. If we continue to make cuts to our spending, like there's going to be a point at which you can no longer make any cuts, right? Like there's a baseline to living.
You can't get blood from a turnip, isn't that what people say?
Or from a rock, like you can't make a rock bleed?
That too?
Is that the term?
Turnips and rocks. I don't know if either of them
bleed. What's going on with people trying to make things bleed? Kind of messed up. But once you get to that point, like that's when you have to shift your attention to increasing your income. In the same way that we can't make a massive impact on our money with these small cuts to our expenses, we also can't make dramatic improvements to our income via the smaller and easier ways to quickly increase our income.
But you know what? That's okay. I think sometimes people need quicker and easier ways to be able to make more money. And there's a time and a place for the part-time job in our lives, right? If you don't know what your scalable business might be, well, there are ways to generate income by selling stuff on Facebook Marketplace or through apps, renting your car out on Turo, doing tasks on TaskRabbit, or giving folks rides as a Lyft driver or Uber driver, right? And even something like shopping arbitrage, where you can buy stuff on deep discount and you can flip it. Well, that can be great for quicker money needs.
Yes, exactly, Joel. I mean, what's at the core of this is the fact that it's a stopgap. These are temporary solutions. These aren't long-term fixes. You know, on the surface, it might sound a little backwards for us to be saying, you need to focus on the big stuff. But it's okay to use, you know, Lyft if you want to, you know, give a few rides and make a buck here and there. But we understand that not everybody has the ability to instantly start making way more money at their day job, right?
And sometimes those side hustles take time to build. And so
for
a decent period of time, we might be making nothing or very little doing a side hustle. But what we're looking at is this long-term projection, this in 3 to 4 years, that's when we're able to start actually making good money. We've turned it from a side hustle into a small business that actually generates income. But for that first year or two, you might be making very little and pouring a lot into it.
Exactly. So in those instances, you would need some of those quick fixes. And this is one way that it doesn't exactly parallel expenses, because pretty much everyone listening to this podcast, they can make some cuts right now, literally today, and overnight they would be saving more at the end of the month. But it is pretty difficult for folks to instantly start making more money in a way that is sustainable and scalable. And so that's why we're saying that, sure, like, we don't want you to focus all of your attention on these near-term measures, but they're definitely okay in order to get you to a certain point.
I think the best way to sum it up, doing something part-time in the short term for some people probably makes a lot of sense, but for a lot of other people, focusing more on the long term makes more sense.
Totally.
So let's cover some of the large impact areas to focus our attention and creative energies, in particular for most people with regular 9-to-5 jobs. Let's say maybe your current job isn't paying enough. Well, the best way to make more money at that job is to find a new one. And that's just time and time again, when you look at the numbers, the biggest way to increase your income is to move to another company.
Yeah. Or maybe you're even in an industry that doesn't utilize your skills, you know, to their fullest potential. Or like maybe you're even with a company where you see the limiting factors of your growth and you know you're not going to progress. It's time to update that resume and start networking.
Yeah. Or you've done 3 annual reviews in a year and you know you're kicking butt, but your boss continues to toe the company line and say that a 2% raise is the maximum that that company's willing to offer. And sometimes if you're in a big bureaucratic business, that's all they're allowed to do. And that's the time where it probably makes a good bit of sense to update your resume and to start tapping your network connections and seeing what else is out there where you could dramatically increase the amount of money you're making just by switching employers.
But maybe you actually like your job, right? And you want to stay there, but you would just like to make more money. So this is when you could ask your employer what you could do to make more.
Sounds like such a simple question.
Yeah, like, what can I do to make more money here? But then here's the thing, is that you actually have to do the thing that they say. But in this case, you want to focus where you already have a job. But maybe you've had that conversation with your boss and, you know, you're not getting great feedback. So in this case, you could be maybe a little more proactive and you can write a job description for a gap that you can see that you know you can fill. There are different ways where you can get ahead at your current employer that don't necessarily involve switching companies. I'm also thinking back to episode 110 where we interviewed Ramit. Joel, he had some amazing strategies when it came to negotiating with your current employer as far as, you know, what steps to take, how to go about it. If you haven't listened to that episode, we would recommend going back and listening to that.
Yeah, and his suggestion isn't necessarily saying, can I please make more money? He really walked people through how to present yourself, how to ask the question, how to follow through in order to ensure that you're not just getting that 2% raise that you're capped at every year, but that you're able to maybe move into a new position or you're able to find ways to get more compensation based specifically on what you're able to accomplish in your job. And so it doesn't have to be leaving your job. Even if you have some of those barriers that seem to have been imposed on you at this point, it could be just kind of taking another approach to management and being more creative in how you ask to be compensated.
Yep. Yeah. He did a really good job just sharing how we can communicate our value to our employers, which I really like, man. And so, you know, like, a lot of what we're talking about here is a side hustle. Let's sort of round this out with maybe sort of a definition, because there is a difference between a side hustle and part-time work. We talked about this in our side hustles episode. There are different definitions that folks are using, but we want the goal. And what we want to work towards is a job or work that we can scale into something larger. Where you can actually own your own business. So for example, like, you don't want to walk dogs on the Rover app. Instead, you want to create your own dog walking small business. There are ways that you can do something that you enjoy or something that you know that you're capable of doing, but you're doing it sort of in your own ecosystem and you're running the show versus being a participant, being part of this larger system.
Yeah, man. And we just posted an article about kind of great freelance opportunities that are out there by our friend Taylor on our website. And so for folks that are looking to see, well, what skills are kind of are people looking for? And how can I go out there kind of selling those skills? How can I go out there starting my side hustle? I think there are just some great suggestions in there for specific jobs to pursue and then the avenues to actually get going. So yeah, people should definitely check that out on our website at howtomoney.com. But yeah, a side hustle is different than part-time work. You're trying to build something for the long term, and ultimately it can pay huge dividends. It can allow you the freedom to be able to work for yourself, which is really cool. And those artificially imposed limits that a current employer might be setting on the amount that you can make when you work for yourself, those don't exist. And that's what's cool. That's how you can move the needle in this major way by earning more. If you have your own business, the sky's the limit, as opposed to those tiny raises that you're probably typically looking at every year.
So true, man. That's right. And, you know, like we've used this term before, but let's talk about widening the gap, right? When you look at the big picture, it's important to not only focus on increasing just your income and to not only focus on just getting your spending down. We need to take a balanced approach by looking at the margin between earning and spending. We want to focus on both and look to increase that gap. That gap is so important, and widening that gap by addressing the big impact areas, that needs to be our top priority. We need to focus on the 80% in both our expenses and the 80% in our income. Those are the areas that we need to devote our attention and our creativity towards. And once we address those 80%, then we can focus on the 20% and we can hone and optimize and tweak. But we don't need to do that until that 80% is addressed.
Yeah, man, there are too many of us that are clipping coupons, that are looking to cut in just these small ways around the periphery of our budget. And we haven't looked at these bigger areas yet. We've kind of left those on the table. And I think it's important to look at these bigger things first. We're not here to disparage frugality, right? We think you should find a frugal sweet spot instead. Basically, we're here to encourage you to consider being more frugal than you already are. But I'm sure that most of you out there have found that frugality only seems to get you so far. You need more help, another boost in your ability to save. So hopefully you can look at these larger expenses in your life and also kind of these ways to attempt to earn more so that you can achieve your financial goals more quickly. If we're just looking at the small stuff, we're not doing a good enough job, and we're not going to be able to move our finances along as quickly in a positive direction as we probably want to.
That's right, man. Let's go ahead and take it back now. We'll shift gears and get back to our beer. On this episode, we each had a hibernation ale, which is an English-style old ale. And I'll go ahead and say that the artwork for this can, I love it, man. It's like baby blue and navy and white, and it is winter all the way. Like it's got a picture of a person
cross-country skiing.
Yeah, exactly. Across this sort of a winter mountain landscape. It speaks of winter and, you know, the holidays. Like the holidays are behind us, but still, it's still cold as all get out there.
And we're in the thick of winter right now.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Yeah, it does feel fitting. And yeah, I love the name Hibernation. It just makes me kind of like want to curl up and sip this
light
beer.
That fire, kind of curl with a warm blanket and a beer and a book.
Totally. This is one of the best names, especially for this style of beer, the flavors that are presented.
Man, this one's perfect.
Yeah, I think old ales don't get enough street cred. I feel like I taste all the things I love about winter in this glass, kind of the spice notes. Old ales have like a stout tendency in some of the darker, richer flavor profiles, but without kind of that thick mouthfeel. And so it can be like this lighter bodied version of something that you might not enjoy necessarily if you don't like stouts. This is something that you might want to try. There's more spice involved. I feel like there's like a little bit of like dark fruit kind of somewhere hidden in this beer.
Sure.
I really, really like this one. And it's just, again, like I said, a style that I don't drink enough of. It's one that I really, really like and appreciate. And not many people brew a good one, but this is a good one.
Yeah, totally. I like what you said about the dark fruits. Makes me think of kind of some dried dates or like raisins a little bit.
Maybe fig, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Which totally fits within the flavor profile of this beer. It makes me think of my grandma, my dad's mom, used to make this. I think we just called it brown bread. But it's this old school bread that you'd make using like molasses, and you'd put raisins in it, and you would bake it in a coffee can, like an old school coffee can.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, this is like Depression era baking.
Gordon Ramsay doesn't make stuff like that.
Although he probably does because it's hip.
Okay.
But because you bake it in the old coffee can, it puts lines in it because of from the can, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, cool.
And so it comes out as this sort of giant bullet shape with these lines that kind of graduate up as you go. And man, my childhood, I remember that was one of the things I loved about visiting my grandparents is brown bread. I think everybody else hated it, but I loved it.
The way you're describing it, I can totally see how this beer would fit that flavor profile. 100%. It's totally got those notes in it. So yeah, I need to try brown bread, and I think it would pair perfectly with this, man.
Well, on the other side of my family, I feel like this beer also has like a touch of soy sauce. So I'm bringing in both sides of my family. I'm bringing in the Midwestern Americans with the Korean. But yeah, it sort of has this darker flavor to it that you do find in soy sauce. I don't know how else to describe it. But if you pick one of these up, maybe you'll taste it too.
Yeah, you know what? And I would suggest sticking to one, because if you drink three, you definitely will fall into a hibernation and you don't want to do that. But yeah, this was Hibernation Ale by Great Divide. Big thanks to our friends over there for sending this one our way. It was a real pleasure to drink it on the show with you today, my friend.
Most definitely.
All right, that's going to be it for this episode. For everyone out there listening, we'd love it if you would stick with our podcast throughout this year, because we've got tons of money-saving advice that we want to throw your way in 2020. And you can check out our show notes for this specific episode on our website at howtomoney.com.
Yeah, and if you dig what you're hearing, make sure that you hit subscribe. That way you don't miss an episode every time they come out. We release one every Monday, every Wednesday. And while you're over in Apple Podcasts, if you haven't already, we would love if you were to leave us a review. That helps others to find the show who need to learn how to handle their money better.
All right, buddy. Until next time.
Best friends out.
Best friends out.